This is the Telegraph Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar. Today we are in Utrecht.
Hello, my name's Richard Moore. I'm with Daniel Freeb.
Hello.
Lionel Burley.
Hello, Richard. Hello, Daniel.
And Lionel. Where are we, Lionel?
We're in Utrecht, in the Netherlands, outside the conference hall, very close to the start and finish for Saturday's opening time trial of the Tour de France, the 2015 Tour de France. That's where we are. That's all we need to say. We're at the Tour de France, actually here. It's happening here and we're here with it.
Sounds a bit drunk, doesn't it?
It does. It's just coffee. Well, we're here. We've been here a little over 24 hours. We drove across, three of us, yesterday in our very nice Jaguar, which might be getting a few mentions in these podcasts. We're doing two podcasts a day. This is our first one. This will go out Friday evening. We're looking ahead to the tour. This is a difficult podcast. This is always a difficult one. Nothing's happened yet. We've just been to press conferences and things like that. We'll also be producing a morning show called Kilometer Zero. We'll tell you a little bit more about that later in the show. Daniel, you've had an interesting day, though, because not only have you been attending press conferences, but you've actually been... There I was on YouTube, and there was you with Mark Maddio.
That was my atrocious barnet. I was hanging out online with Mark Maddio. Mm. Now, can you think of a more incongruous setting for Mark Maddio? A man who is very proud of the fact that he keeps his Wellington boots for 40 years before he buys a new pair, than a Google Hangout. But he was on good form, as you would expect. Mark Maddio is always a great talker, the manager of the FDJ team, very outspoken, of course, had some very forthright views about camping cars, as you would expect. Mark Maddio famously, infamously poo-pooed when Sky came into professional cycling. He said every day it's something new with them, a computer, an altitude tent, a Jaguar. It's all a phony war. It's all a load of rubbish. And he actually made a very serious point about the equality of opportunities among teams, and there is a reason why every team is given the same accommodation. Dave Brailsford can say what he likes about sleep being very important now for athletes. Well, it's always been important, but more and more research being done into this. However, if some of the teams can't afford to put their riders in a luxury camping car, then they're at a disadvantage.
But then where do you know, equality, there's a limit to how achievable equality across the board is when you're talking about equipment, clothing, nutrition. I mean, everything costs money.
But once riders are at the race, I think it's the duty of the organiser to put them on as even a footing as possible, is it not?
Yeah, but even that isn't entirely achievable. We've seen the disparity in the quality of the hotels, haven't we? I mean, it is...
Well, in theory, every team, it evens out over the... They have a certain number of stars. There's actually one of our listeners on Twitter, I think Mr. Gareth Entercott, has done a very interesting study into this, comparing not the star ratings of the hotels that teams have been allocated on this Tour de France, but their approval rating on things like TripAdvisor.
Mm, interesting.
So we're going to now consult TripAdvisor before the hotels are allocated to the Tour de France? I mean, they'll be going through the comments and saying, well, the roller toaster didn't work on my visit to this particular hotel, or the coffee machine wasn't good enough, or, you know, there was a squeaky noise in the elevator. And then where do we draw the line there? I think everyone should be in a hermetically sealed pod at night during the Tour de France, and they all have they all have exactly the same environment to sleep in.
Is that not what Sky already sleep in, hermetically sealed pods? No,
upside down.
Like bats. Yeah. Anyway, this has got off to a very strange start, hasn't it? I mean, we're supposed to be previewing the Tour de France.
Follow us on Twitter at cycling_podcast or on our website, thecyclingpodcast.com.
Since we're on the subject of hotels, we're in different places. We arrived, as I said, after a traumatic journey through the Channel Tunnel. It was more the journey to Dover, to Folkestone, that was the problem, in fact. Big problems on the roads in south of England. But we got through the tunnel, came out the other end as well, drove to Utrecht, which took about 4 hours, and we checked into our monastery, didn't we, Lionel?
Yeah, we're staying in a converted monastery just outside Utrecht. Very nice, very nice place. Quite a small bedroom, as you'd expect. A monk doesn't need a lot lot of mod cons, do they? So no air conditioning. It's very, very warm here in Utrecht. I think it's going to be 37 degrees tomorrow. So could be a pretty sleepless night. So really, perhaps we should be moving into Sky's vacant camper van and getting a good night's sleep in air-conditioned luxury.
Well, Dave Brailsford has his own motorhome here, and he gave some of our colleagues a little tour today of his own motorhome, which he's sleeping in. They've got a mobile dining car as well, which isn't necessarily a new thing, but they're certainly advancing with the motorhome, the vehicle's idea, as much as they're allowed to do within the rules.
Well, I thought that was one of the most interesting things from today's succession of press conferences. Probably one of the few interesting things I heard today was Brailsford talking about the implications of Dimension Data and their sign up with the Tour de France organisers to basically present a whole wealth of data, not just to the television audience, but also to the teams taking part in the race. And for the first time, every rider will be logged. Their GPS will be logged, so you'll know at any given point where they are on the road. You'll know how quickly they cover certain sections of the course. It's like a sort of a giant Strava, I guess. And Brailsford made the point that the teams that take that data away and analyse it the best will presumably work out new ways to, it'll be another sort of marginal gain. Some people, you know, I don't want to prejudge Mark Maddio, but he might not necessarily be quite so excited about the opportunities this presents. But I think some teams will look at this, and Brailsford made the bold claim that it will radically alter the way that bike races are contested.
Yeah, just to put into perspective the differences between Sky's approach and FDJ's approach. Mark Maddio seemed most concerned today when I spoke to him about what day of the tour he was going to play La Marseillaise, the French national anthem, in the bus to rouse the troops. That's what he does every year on the Tour de France. He gets very excited about that. He says he will certainly be playing in the team car one, if not several days. Meanwhile, Sky could conceivably be using this real-time data to kind of X-ray of the peloton. In fact, Dave Brailsford's vision for it, what he thinks teams will eventually be doing, is having what he described as a dweeb somewhere remotely away from the race, probably in London or in their case, analysing the data as the race is going on and feeding back in real time to the team cars and even perhaps to the riders.
I think all this data and just the sound of it, a bum note, but a lot of this stuff is certainly valuable if used properly, but a lot of it is also reducing or it's an attempt to reduce the sport, and we see it in football a lot as well, to formulas and equations.
Don't get Lionel started on this.
What it overlooks a lot of the time is talent. I mean, we were talking earlier on, Lionel, about your mate who did player ratings for a football team and how he was rating each player out of 10 for how he perceived he played. But that didn't pay any attention to what instructions he'd been given by the manager. That's relative too. So if a rider is spending a lot of time at the back of the bunch, there could be a valid reason for that. He might be collecting rain capes and taking them back or doing something. You know, the data doesn't tell the whole picture, and I think what it overlooks a lot of the time is, and it's like the time from the bottom to the top of a mountain doesn't tell the whole picture either. It doesn't tell how a guy's raced up there, it doesn't tell how he's ridden, it doesn't tell where he's ridden, it doesn't tell on whose wheels he's ridden. There's so much that the data misses, I think.
Yeah, but I think that was Brailsford's point. It's who uses the available data that in the most smart way will gain some kind of edge, because there will be things that they weren't aware of that will be highlighted to them. I think that's the big problem that cycling has, or probably all professional sports have, is the perception that people watching have and the reality of how the people taking part are contesting the event. You know, we watch from a distance, we watch from the outside, we can only guess at the motives and the thought processes that are going on within a race. The data will undoubtedly give a bigger picture, but to us on the outside it may not necessarily give a clearer picture, certainly not at the start, until we know how this data is going to be used.
It's a piece of the jigsaw, isn't it, rather than the whole picture. Daniel, you looked like you were going to say something there.
No, I was just thinking about what else I did. I'm trying to move us along to a different topic. Well, so there was Mark Maddio. Jan Ulrich gave an interview to Le Monde today.
Greg Le Monde? No, or the newspaper Le Monde?
The newspaper Le Monde appeared out of the woodwork.
Wow.
Didn't admit an awful lot. Admitted that he doped. He claimed, or he implied, that it was only for one season, 2005-2006. But that was quite a surprise. Obviously, I have a bit of a vested interest in that because I'm working on something on Jan Ulrich. But what else? What else, Rich? I got lost on my run this morning, very badly lost. It was supposed to be about a 6 kilometre run. It turned into about a 12 kilometre run because I couldn't get over the bridges in Utrecht.
Oh, that's a nightmare, isn't it? Serves you right for going running.
But on a more serious note, Chris Froome was very relaxed, I thought. Brailsford thinks he's a different man this year.
It's interesting that, because I spoke to Froome last week and I was struck by how relaxed he was. And it's funny that he mentioned very early in his press conference about being an expectant father. I thought that was interesting. He said that that was part of the reason why he feels relaxed and I suppose happy. I think, you know, the other reason is that the team that's around him is very much a team that's been built in his image and to help him. You know, there's been no question this year over whether Wiggins would, which has overshadowed the last two tours to France and the Sky teams, that's not been a question this year. Brailsford as well seems very relaxed and very, very confident, and it does look a strong team, doesn't it? I mean, Brailsford said he thinks it's the strongest team in the race.
But he wasn't drawn on whether it was the strongest Sky team. He didn't want to.
Sorry, No, Froome said that he thinks it's the strongest team in the race. Brailsford said he thinks it's the strongest team Sky have ever brought to the tour.
Yeah,
I think Brailsford maybe says that every year though.
He probably does. We could probably go back and find him. He's said that several times before, and on all occasions it may well have been true, except in 2010. Although in 2010 it was definitely true, wasn't it? Because that was definitely the strongest team that Sky had ever brought to the race.
You just look down the line of the riders that are attending the press conference, the Sky riders today, and you know it does bear out a point to a certain extent that we made in a previous podcast about not so much lack of experience, but maybe a lack of kind of gravitas and kind of presence in the peloton. Brailsford himself, after the press conference, was talking to me about this problem of the crashes that are inevitably going to happen when the GC teams and the sprinters teams sort of pile in, and they've all got their trains, and there'll be GC trains on one side of the road, sprinters trains on the other side of the road, and there'll be this big melee, and we hope, you know, not too many people get hurt. But he said that, you know, perhaps once upon a time the teams would have got together, direct support teams would have got together, the captains would have got together, guides on the road would have got together. He even said at the Giro it was beneficial to have someone like Bernard Eisel, a very experienced Austrian rider, having those kind of conversations as the race was going on. You know, if we all sit back a little bit, then it will benefit all of us. But, you know, he almost acknowledged that there isn't really anyone in the team at the moment, and that's obviously going to be a big talking point over the next few days, I think. And you know, Astana certainly have those guys. Tinkoff, probably more than anyone, have those guys, with the likes of Basso, Tozzato, Benarty, and that is my only real question mark about Sky.
Yeah, you mentioned Tinkoff Saxo. I mean, are they under the illusion that this is some kind of Masters Tour de France, like for only kind of veteran riders? I don't know. They've brought an extremely experienced, brackets, old team, haven't they?
You can't win anything with kids, as somebody once said. But speaking of kids, I spoke to Luke Rowe after the Team Sky press conference. He is a debutant, but he's been given quite an important role within the team. He's almost been talked of as a road captain. So I spoke to him a little bit after the press conference, and we'll be speaking to him, I think, throughout the tour, getting his thoughts on his first ever Tour de France. So here's Luke Rowe.
It's certainly starting to sink in, just the size of the race. It's when you go to like the presentation yesterday and the press conference today, just for two examples, you just realise the enormity of it. Now, in terms of tomorrow, I'm really looking forward to just getting going. I mean, the last 3 days have just been absolutely full gas. You come here thinking you'd have a few easy days before your race, and any other race in the world you would, but it's just been full gas. So I'm looking forward to getting the ball rolling and getting a few days under the belt and cracking on now.
Why is that? Is it just demands on your time, just things that you have to do? Or?
Yeah, exactly. Like we did the TTT recon in France on Wednesday, then flew straight here Thursday. We did the team presentation yesterday, interviews, massage. Today we had to meet Oakley, Rafa, this today, and it's just it just seems you don't get any time on your bed at all. Yesterday I didn't get any time until after dinner, so it's just a pretty full gas. But that's I suppose that's one of the things that when you speak about the tour to the guys, that's the one thing they say. Just the bike race in itself, you're racing the same guys, but off the bike everything is on a bigger scale and more blown up, and that's what I'm learning.
You've had a sort of breakout season. You were a little bit ill, I think, at the Dauphiné, but how's the form? You recovered from that? You feeling strong and healthy?
No, physically and mentally in a really good place. I got sick on the seventh stage of Dauphiné, and I really suffered finishing a gruppetto half an hour down, which, you know, we were out the back the whole day. It just wasn't right. And then the final stage on Sunday, I didn't take part. Just, you know, with this in the back of the mind, I just thought it was best to get back home and chill out and recover. But certainly now, mentally fresh, just absolutely gunning for this race. Just can't wait to get going. And physically, I'm confident in my form.
And you rode the British Nationals, of course. It was a very hard race. I think you were suffering after that, weren't you?
Oh, that was... if you look at the numbers, that's the hardest race of the year. That's the hardest... numbers are higher than that than they are in Roubaix, just because the whole day you're making the race, there's no time to sit in. If you sit in, you get caught out and you're dropped. Straight away after 4K, the race was on, splitting the crosswinds, and it was pretty much full gas all day. But certainly Monday morning, I woke up and felt like I'd done a big effort. But I think it's good to have a hit out like that long before a race. I think that'll actually do me some good for the first week. So feel fresh.
And you got a big job to do, obviously, the first week or so. These are the stages that should suit you. You're part of that classics group that Chris Froome talked about. Are you looking forward to those?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the challenge. Like you say, through Geraint Thomas and Ian Stannard, who are both, you know, won classics and prolific classics riders, and myself, who's knocking on the door. So I think between us three, a lot will fall on our shoulders, and certainly with the cobbles, but not only the cobbles, there's, you know, plenty of opportunity for crosswinds and stuff. So a lot of responsibility on my shoulders to make sure Froome is in the right place at the right time and the right side of them splits. But it's, you know, it's a job that I know I can do. I'm fairly confident. I've done it time and time before, so I just got to keep doing it again. You know, it's a lot of responsibility, and it's quite a lot of pressure, but yeah, bring it on.
You're the youngest guy in the team, you're a debutant, but a lot of people talking about you as one of the guys who will make decisions, you know, be a sort of road captain, communicate with the rest. I mean, how do you take on that responsibility when you are such a young rider still?
You know, it's all just a respect thing, and I think, you know, a road captain isn't necessarily a guy who makes the final decision, and he's not there to boss people around or be a dickhead. He's just there to... It's all just communication. All you're really doing is speaking to other riders, speaking to all the riders in your own team, and then relaying that back to the DS, and the DS makes the final call. So it's just you know, speaking to your own team and your own riders, knowing how everyone is, knowing, listen, I'm on a bad day, I'm on a good day, and just using your...
Do you enjoy that aspect of it, though? Like, you know, the sort of taking a sort of overall view of the race, do you quite enjoy that aspect of it?
Yeah, it's something I quite enjoy. I've watched racing since I was a kid, and the tactics are such a massive part of it. And even when I'm not racing, I still enjoy watching a bike race and just seeing the different teams' tactics and what have you. And I think it's certainly something, yeah, definitely something I enjoy.
You are listening to the Telegraph Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar, with Richard Moore, Lionel Burney and Daniel Fripp.
The other press conferences today were Movistar with Nairo Quintana was there, and Lionel, I think you were there for that one. Daniel was at Cofidis. I'm sure you'll have some news from Cofidis. I went to Astana. Vincenzo Nibali appeared with Jakob Fuglsang and Lars Boom, and Chris Baldwin, their press officer, was in very entertaining form as well. Nibali was there. He was as relaxed and unruffled as ever. Felt a bit sorry for Fuglsang, who didn't get asked any questions. Baldwin was almost urging people to ask Fuglsang a question, which only made it worse, which only drew attention to the fact they hadn't been asked a question. Ciro Scognamiglio of Gazzetta dello Sport was obviously there. In fact, his boss Luca asked if we could maybe find him a job in London. I don't know if he wants rid of him, but Ciro will be coming on the podcast on a regular basis, of course. But Nibali, a lot of people talking about him maybe doing something in the first week, as he did last year at the cobbled stage. He's now got Lars Boom, who won the cobbled stage last year. That's a very strong team they have. Louis Westra as well for that cobbled stage on Tuesday. Nibali just doesn't really give anything away. He doesn't appear happy or sad. He just seems like such an easygoing, happy-go-lucky sort of bloke, doesn't he?
I'm actually reading his autobiography at the moment, which came out amid not much fanfare after the Tour de France last year. It's only in Italian. Some very interesting passages about his childhood and his early days as a cyclist and how he has this sort of particular style of attacking out of the saddle, then sitting down. And he attributes this to being chased by dogs when he was training, when he was riding as a teenager around Sicily.
And what, just out sprinting them?
Yes, and sorry, and this was so presumably, you know, if he had a Rottweiler yapping around his calf muscles getting out of the saddle, this was, I don't know, it was a more advantageous position to avoid the overtures of attack dogs. I don't know.
Must be where I was going when I got chased when I was quite young on a bike, when I was about 12. I didn't get out of the saddle and sprint. I
hit them over the head with a pump.
No, I didn't. I did get my, yeah, I did wave my pump at the dog, but in the end I just got off my bike and jumped over a nearby fence into a field where the dog couldn't get me.
Well, that says a lot about your cycling career compared to Nibali's cycling career, I think. It says it all. Nairo Quintana, did he appear alongside Alejandro Valverde? Because obviously there's still a little niggling question about the sort of hierarchy in that team, isn't there?
Yeah, and no real answers today as to how that hierarchy is. I'm sure, well, just from looking at it, Alejandro Valverde, I think, sees himself as joint leader of the team. And with the first week, the first 9 days, that's probably not a bad strategy to have two chiefs, just in case something happens to Quintana. Although the thing about Quintana is he is very good at just staying out of trouble. I've seen him on the finish line 2 years ago, 2013, when he just kind of had his first couple of days looking good in the mountains, and he just looks cool as a cucumber, really unruffled, just a very sort of happy customer, and a bit like Nibali, hard to read, really. And that was the same
totally
today.
Inscrutable, yeah.
Well, he is a very gritty little character, and he's shown his teeth a little bit over the last 48 hours or so. Nibali made a throwaway remark at the Dauphiné about not having seen Quintana this year, implying really that he hadn't raced an awful lot and he hadn't won an awful lot. I think this was sort of mistranslated and put to Quintana as some sort of slight about maybe training in secret and avoiding dope testers. And Quintana was pretty upset about that yesterday. He didn't attack Nibali directly, but he was very keen to set the record straight. He was also very keen, or he has been on numerous occasions recently, to set the record straight about his upbringing. And there are a lot of stories, sort of very cliched stereotype stories, about him hailing from a tiny pueblo lost in the Andes. I don't even know if the Andes, if Colombia, no, has any Andes. No, it doesn't. But in the mountains of Colombia, and Quintana and having to ride to
the peasant farmer,
yeah, cliche. Having to ride to school every day up a huge mountain because his parents couldn't afford the bus fare. That's not actually the case. I think he's been quite clear that he rode to school every day because he just wanted to ride to school every day.
Yeah, I mean, I think he said his parents were poor but not poverty stricken. And he also did clarify that he said he was tested five times in Colombia while he was training there, between Romandy and coming back for the Route du Sud, which is just over a month, which, you know, five times is a fair amount. And there's no reason at all why he wouldn't be tested in Colombia.
And just on testing, I heard today that there have been nighttime tests this week. There was one rider I know of who was tested at 2 o'clock in the morning at home. There was a ring on his door. We knew that the UCI had latitude to do this, but we weren't sure that these tests were actually going ahead yet. But that was confirmed today that they are happening.
Brailsford was asked about that and said that it was a necessary evil, if you like, that it's not ideal, and he doesn't want to see races won because somebody's sleep deprived, but it is necessary to fight doping.
Which I thought was a bit of a ridiculous point. You know, to suggest that it's not as though someone's going to be tested repeatedly over the course of a week at night. It will happen once and it will happen out of competition. So, you know, if someone gets tested at 2 a.m. in the morning on a Tuesday and they're racing on a Sunday, to suggest that
you don't think it'll happen in competition at all.
It can't happen in competition. Right. So right. I didn't really attach too much importance by.
I didn't actually realise that. Did you realise that, Lionel?
No, I didn't know. One other thing I wanted to ask, Daniel. You went to the Cofidis press conference. What's the latest with Nasser Bouhanni?
He's, by all accounts, pretty hopeful that he's going to feel okay when it comes to the first sprint on Sunday. When he crashed last Sunday at the French National Championships, the doctors told him that he would be in pain for 7 to 10 days. He said, well, you know, Monday will be the end of that period when he was likely to feel some after effects of the crash. So he's happy, confident. Cofidis announced today that they'd extended their sponsorship for another 3 years, so they're going to be in the sport for until 2019, at least the end of 2019. So that's more good news in the Cofidis camp.
That will mean 22 years in the peloton. That's quite a long stint,
and no one's seen them for the last 15.
FDJ are the same. They started at the same time, Cofidis and FDJ.
Yeah, but considering that the Cofidis money is effectively out of the business of Francois Migrain, that's quite a considerable sum of money over that 22 years. That's a lot of
loans.
That is a lot of loans for people in France who need to get to their next payday with a short-term loan at a very high interest rate.
It's a lot of that.
During the Tour de France, listen twice a day to the Telegraph Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar. There is all the latest interviews and analysis from every stage in the evening show. And in the morning, Monday to Friday, Kilometer Zero, we'll take you inside the tour in the company of the podcast team, Richard Moore, Daniel Fripp, and Lionel Burney.
Any other news to report? I just one other little thing from us, Dan. I just had a feeling that it was quite interesting the way Lars Boom, when he was finally asked a question, was talking about that cobbled stage on Tuesday, that he, you know, his job will be to be aggressive and to try and instigate splits and so on, and that, you know, the plan, Nibali doesn't need looking after. He said Nibali just needs to be on my wheel. He's not going to be somebody who needs to be wrapped in cotton wool and guided over the cobbles in the way that some other GC favourites might be, and so they might have a plan to rip it up a bit on Tuesday, as they did last year perhaps.
Yeah, I think, as we know, a lot depends on the weather. The cobble sections themselves are supposedly, based on anecdotal evidence that's come from the riders who have tested the cobbles, they are rougher, they are harder, they're nastier than the cobbles were in the stage last year. So a lot of guys will be having some sleepless nights, I think, the night before.
And not because they've been interrupted by the testers?
No, hopefully not. On point related to something we said earlier about Buhani, of course, we all expect a sprint finish on Sunday, don't we? And Mark Cavendish is in good spirits.
Oh, yeah, Mark Cavendish, we had him today as well.
Very, very good spirits. Was on spiky form last night at the team presentation, but he's always on spiky form. He'll be riding this new bike, this new specialised Venge, very, very aerodynamic bike, which is pretty much a time trial bike. There have been a few issues with it in the last few weeks as he has tested it and got used to it, and various tweaks have been made, but he rode it last week in the British National Championships and was very happy with the solution that Specialized have now come up with, and he'll be riding that, I assume, providing the weather is okay, on Sunday.
You can hear an extended conversation with Mark Cavendish, of course, behind our new paywall, which is had been worked on frantically by our technical team, and in particular big thanks to Liam Laverty and Jonathan Rowe for their work in helping people who've had issues with it. And please, if you do, just email cyclingpodcast@outlook.com. But you can become a friend of the Cycling Podcast at thecyclingpodcast.com. £5 gets you access to all our friends' specials. I think there are five there. We also put up behind the paywall this week our recent event at Foyles Bookshop in London. We did a sort of hour-long imperfect Tour de France, stories from the tour.
Live and slightly censored.
There's a couple of bleeps.
I'm glad it was censored, because some of it was very much...
Your stories weren't bleeped out, but just the odd sweary word was bleeped out. Anyway, that's up there. That's behind our paywall. £5 will get you access to that. We'll be putting stuff behind there during the tour. We might have some extended interviews. We've got our special going up on doping, which will go behind the paywall at some point during the tour as well. So sign up there. Were you going to add anything there, Lionel?
No, I was going to say new hot off the press, the new Cycling Podcast t-shirt. The tour is a slogan. I apologise, Daniel, I kind of nicked your meme there, really. You're the sort of unofficial The Tour is the Tour police on Twitter. If anyone uses it, it's a well-worn cliche, and you keep your eyes peeled for it. But I mentioned it in last week's Tour de France preview, and it sort of captured the imagination of a few people.
Captured everyone's imagination. Yeah. Speaking of T-shirts, we will also, in this at the Tour de France this year, be launching a daily prize, a Pedlar de Charme, kindly sponsored by our friends at British Eurosport. The British Eurosport presents the daily Pedlar de Charme, which is our riposte to the Most Aggressive Rider Award.
But there's a big drawback, a big caveat. It's not a very democratic competition, is it? Because you have to be participating in the Tour de France to enter. You have to be riding the Tour de France.
You have to be riding the Tour to enter.
Which will probably rule out quite a few people, quite a few listeners.
It will. Orla Chinoui has offered, volunteered to be on the judging panel for that. I'm not sure if we'll take her up on that offer or not. But we will be deciding every day on the day's Pedlar de Charme. The next morning, one of us will be dispatched to that rider's team bus and forced to endure the humiliating ordeal of presenting them with a Pedlar de Charme T-shirt.
You're committing us to this on the air.
Yeah, we're gonna give the riders Pedlar de Charme T-shirts. They might accept them or not. Who knows?
Why do we need an extra judge on the panel for? You know, we just come up.
You know, she just volunteered.
Two bits, the usual two bits.
Well, you used to be on the Combativity Award panel,
which was much the same. Very
democratic.
Similar. It was kind of democratic, but there was no logic, method, or.
But we'll extend a little bit. We're opening up to people on Twitter. Please do tweet your suggestions, your nominations every day. If a rider has caught your eye for their charming pedaling, just tweet hashtag PDC, Pedlar de Charme, or hashtag pedaler, because PDC I think might already be used by Podium Cafe.
PDC isn't PDC the darts governing body.
Don't want to get confused with that.
Well, we're going to filter out people who shouldn't have a vote because they've got to spell pedaler correctly for us to find their nomination.
Hashtag pedaler, nominate. Well, that'll start on Saturday with the time trial, won't it? So nominate your pedalers de charme on Twitter. Hashtag pedaler.
Favourite for Saturday's pedaler de charme, though, isn't there?
Who's that, Lionel?
Well, all will be revealed.
Well, that we don't want to prejudge anything. We'll be coming nightly at about roughly 9 p.m., 10 p.m. Nightly show, and every morning Monday to Friday, Kilometre Zero should go up about 10 a.m. and that will be a slightly more featurey style show. A sideways look at the tour, tell you a bit about life on the tour, introduce some of the people on the race, tell you a little bit about the journey around France and Holland and Belgium this year as well. So, listen, thank you very much. So let's wrap it up there, and we'll be back tomorrow to discuss stage one. Lionel.
Yeah, stage one, kicking off with Daniel Tekle-Heimanot at 2 p.m. European time. It's going to be good.
Thank you, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you.
For the best analysis, discussions and interviews from the 2015 Tour de France, listen to the Telegraph Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar.